Unbranded Podcast, and I'm your host, Susie Dean. I'm so grateful to have you on this journey with me. And by journey, it's a journey of self-discovery, of learning about others, reigniting the passions I've long had but never had the time to dive into until now. If you're here, I'm sure you also have an interest in plant magic, living in alignment with nature, spirituality, and the magic that surrounds us that we don't see but works constantly in our lives. And I'm sure you also consider yourself a little bit woo-woo. So sit crisscross applesauce, cleanse your space, set up your diffuser with some oils that uplift you, and enjoy while we have interesting conversations with interesting people on Unbranded with Susie Dean. Had some unusual and unexpected jobs, one of them being working as a recreational therapy aide on the electroconvulsive therapy unit at Shands Hospital. Quite a wild experience. During this time, I had the privilege of working under a recreational therapist who happened to also be a beekeeper as a side hobby. Her passion introduced me to the intricate and beautiful world of bees, sparking my curiosity. Like, did you know you could get your PhD in bees? Since then, I've been on a quest for more information on bees, beekeeping, and their culture, but finding the right person has proved elusive until now. My pursuit led me to Ariella Daly of Honey Bee Wild, who beautifully integrates beekeeping with spirituality. Our conversation was profoundly healing for me, coinciding with my journey of rewiring my birth story and addressing associated trauma. Ariella shares not only the significance of bees, but also delves into the cultural and historical myths, beliefs, bee animism, womb wisdom, and folklore surrounding bees and bee priestesses of ancient Greece. We explore the healing power bees had on Ariella's life from the beginning of her practice, her studies in bee shamanism, touching upon a recent scandal in the community, and her teachings and offerings. Ariella emanates wisdom, grounding, self-worth, and a life-giving energy. Listening to her, I have no doubt you'll be drawn to soak in her feminine power and wisdom. She is truly a gem. Lucky us!
If you follow me on social media, you know I've been sharing significantly more about how I support my health and wellness naturally and with the gifts that the earth has provided to us. Whether that be by eating beef liver every day, getting my feet in the earth and eyes in the morning sunlight, or meditating with my crystals, you guys always show curiosity and sometimes even do it along with me. But if you've really been following along, you know that I've been using and loving Young Living's essential oils for years to not only make my house smell yummy, but to manage my anxiety and depression, lift my spirits, fix bug bites, ground, manifest, detox my house, balance my hormones, aid in my digestion, you name it. Whether you're seeking a moment of tranquility after a busy day, needing assistance with arthritis, inflammation, chronic headaches, or even just need some assistance with soothing your new baby when you're at a loss, Young Living's essential oils are your answer, and I'm so confident in saying that. These concentrated plant extracts have been used for centuries to promote well-being and balance in both body and mind, and Young Living's oils specifically go through strict third-party testing and must pass the highest quality standards before they're placed in your home. They are the only oils I trust to use in my home, on my body, and most importantly, around my baby. If you're new to essential oils, but thinking they might just be something that would support your health, I'd be so happy to make a wellness plan for you, chat with you through uses and benefits, and give you all of the extra perks that come with making a shift in your life. If you're a seasoned essential oil pro looking to switch to a high-quality brand with strong values and ethics, use the link in the show notes to shop around and use the code SHAREYL for an extra 10% off. Either way, slide into my DMs for extra perks, gifts, and money back before ordering. These oils will change your life, and I'm so grateful that I get to spend my days using the magic of plants to support my body in working optimally, as it was meant to. Click the link in my bio to explore all that Young Living has to offer and shoot me a DM if you want to get started. I would love nothing more than to be your new oily buddy. I love you. Now, back to the show.
I'm so happy to hang out with you and learn from you and your wisdom.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Can you just do like a brief, who are you? What do? What are your values? What are some fun facts? Keep it simple.
Sure. Gosh, I'm going to start with what drives me. So I'm Ariella, and I live in Northern California with my sister and my daughter. But what popped into my mind when he asked that was sort of what do I do question is always interesting because there's lots of facets to what I do. But the why behind it is really important to me. And my why is that I'm very interested in supporting people falling in love with the earth. And I believe that a lot of that, you know, all of the conservation that's needed and all of the shifting of consciousness that's needed to become, to show up in deeper relationship with the earth and to relate to it in an animate way, you know, the consciousness of a tree or the consciousness of a rock or a river, all of that can't be forced. It happens when we fall in love, when we have moments of wonder in nature. And the way that I have found that, my little niche, little golden thread, so to speak, is through honeybees. So I teach natural beekeeping and I work as a beekeeper and I've had a lot of profound spiritual experiences with bees. I have a lot of interest in ancient cultures and pre-Christian cultures, particularly in Europe, the women's spirituality of old Europe, places like ancient Greece, where there were bee priestesses, my Celtic roots. I'm also a musician. I play piano and I raise a daughter on my own. I had a daughter via a donor a few years ago, so she's almost three.
Oh my God.
That's my life. I teach dream work. I mean, it's a lot. I do a lot of different things.
Oh, we're going to have to talk about dream work because I was listening when I was stalking you this morning. I heard a video of you talking to me about dreaming with the bees.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. But we have some groundwork to lay before we get there.
Sure.
I wanted you so desperately on the podcast and I pursued you for half a year, girl.
I'm not always the greatest at noticing all of my emails. Single mom.
No, totally makes sense. But I have been slightly fangirling over you for so long because, one, it's really hard to find people that are working with bees and educating on bees and doing it in such a different way, such a way that aligns with your authenticity, which I find very comforting. And I found my vast interest in bees when I was in college and I was working on the electroconvulsive therapy unit on a psych ward at the hospital. Odd. And then my boss, she had her own beehives in her backyard, just like three of them, and gardened and was in just the whole thing. It was so cool. But she had mentioned to me in passing once that people can get their PhD in bees. And I was like, bees? What? And that's when I started discovering that bees are not like other insects. They're not like other animals. They have their own societies. They are so intricate. You have to be so careful when like introducing a new queen or finding a new queen. Cause, and you'll correct me about this later. I think like six females are born at once and then they like fight to the death for who's going to be the queen. Is that
kind of, yeah. Usually like they'll create six potential queens and then whoever hatches first will go through and sting the other ones to death. But if two hatch at once, then they'll do a fight to the death.
Yeah. It's like these small things. These are like, this is a culture. The bees have their own culture. And
I literally, in fact, the world of bees and beekeeping is called apiculture. Epi meaning bee. So the culture of bees. Yeah.
It's so cool. But I've never been able, that's where my understanding stopped, because I was never able to find easy, accessible, digestible information about bees afterward until recently, when I was like, you know, this is something that I can like take control of, and I can find people who are going to be able to help spread this word and educate me so I can continue spreading it. How did this all come to be? Can you tell me about your childhood? Come to be.
Yeah.
Pun intended.
It's funny because a lot of people get into beekeeping for honey, which is actually not why I got into beekeeping. I didn't even like honey as a kid. Neither does my daughter, which is really interesting. Unless it's come straight out of the hive and it's still like fresh and in the comb, and she loves it. But the comb is like where bees store honey. So it's that when you think of a honeycomb, that's what we're talking about. But I was raised by two parents who are both from the United States, but met overseas. They met in Japan as teachers studying abroad. Then they moved to Peru for a few years. And then I was supposed to be raised in Venezuela, but there was a coup in Venezuela right before I was born. And my parents lost the funding for the program they were going to go teach in. So I was instead raised in a small town in Northern California. Like literally, they just started driving through small towns in California. And I, because of these connections to travel, I was raised on a lot of, you know, visitors from all over the world, and particularly musicians. So I became a musician very young. I started taking piano at 4 years old, and there was this cross-cultural influence in my life. People from, you know, Peru would come stay with us, and bands from Russia and Brazil, and they'd just stay with us. So I was already very interested in these sort of multicultural cross-cultural connections, which plays into my world of bees. And then my mother is a teacher, very invested in nature and how to teach people to be in relationship with nature, how to teach kids. So my childhood was a lot of camping, a lot of mud puddles, a lot of nature art, just so much make-believe. My dad would tell us make-believe stories every night. I just found, he passed away a couple of years ago, and I found a old tape deck with these recordings of him telling his little girls fantasy stories. So we were just sort of in this special magical realm as children, like magical realism almost.
You are so lucky. What a beautiful, and I'm so grateful that you're the multifaceted nature of who you are today and how it has led you to here started so closely in your home. I just know for me, all of these influences that have brought me to where I am and my view of the world, a lot of them were outside, which is beautiful. But to have that at your hands all day, every day in your home with your parents, that's so special. And to give your kids those opportunities, I mean, invaluable. So then how did beekeeping, I mean, your mom was very into nature.
She was, but she didn't keep bees. Nobody really, bees weren't a thing. You know, I was one of those kids that got very singular about certain things. So there was a period where I was very into wolves, period where I was very into shells, little kid. Anyway, I went into cultural anthropology in college and really started to focus on spirituality and religion. I took a semester in Ireland focusing on that area, as well as some archaeology, and just kept getting more and more interested in folk traditions and what survived. I've always had a strong interest in my heritage, which is mostly Celtic and Scottish and English and Irish and all that. And I wanted to know like what happened before, for instance, the genocide that happened in Ireland, or what happened before the witch trials, what happened before, what were the earth-based spiritualities before? And it wasn't enough for me to get into neo-paganism, which I did for a little while as a young, 19, 20 year old. I really wanted to understand some of the roots. And in the process, this is actually an interesting story because it's rather convoluted given some newer findings that have come through in the last year. But in the process, I discovered, you know, post-college, a tradition, or at least we thought it was a tradition at that point, of bee women or bee shamans coming out of Europe. And there were workshops and classes. So I didn't even want to keep bees at first. I was just drawn to learning about these women and this folk tradition that still existed after so long, which was incredible, you know, for me to find something that hadn't been obliterated by patriarchy and colonialism. And, yeah. You know, colonialism happened in Europe too. It happened to other European, you know, countries like the Celts and whatnot. So I wanted to know, like, did anything survive? And at that point, this work was presented as something that had survived, which was really potent for me. It was beautiful to learn about the bee priestesses. I really got interested in ancient Egypt, not ancient Egypt, although yes, that too. why not? Of course. They, you know, ancient Egypt, like lower Egypt, was called the land of the bee. So there's stuff there. But really this diaspora of bee worship throughout Europe. And I ended up signing up for a program, a workshop called The Way of the Melissa. And I went there, and while I was in the workshop, a wild swarm, which is how bees give birth, they swarm into a new expression. So side note for the non-beekeepers, yeah. Swarming is not just getting swarmed by bees and attacked. Swarming actually comes from when a colony, the superorganism that is the honeybees, which is made up of the mother or the queen, the daughters, the sisters, what we call the workers, and then the drones, the males. So it's made up of these parts. They will divide, almost like cell division, and one colony will stay behind and raise a new queen, and the mother will leave with about two-thirds to three-quarters of the bees and swarm off in a big cloud of bees and land on a nearby branch, and then they'll start looking for a home. And once they find a home, again, they'll lift off, fly to their new home. And what they're looking for is a warm, dark, dry place where they can raise babies and make honey. And sometimes those places aren't tree hollows or other people's bee boxes. Sometimes those places are, you know, an attic, or in my case, the wall of my house. So I came home from learning about these bee women and doing these beautiful shamanic womb shamanism practices to bees living in the wall of my house.
Oh, it was a sign.
Very much so. And it was just like, you know, jaw dropping. It was very, very interesting to experience. So I was literally dreaming with bees because they were on the other side of my bedroom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're in the walls. We didn't remove them. And that, of course, made me like, well, these bees are probably going to swarm in the spring. And why not start? So I started, this was July, I started researching. I took one beekeeping class, and then I built my own hive. But I didn't go with the typical hive box, which everybody thinks of when you think of a beehive, which is like a little rectangular box. I learned about something called topar hives, which they're used all over Africa, but they were originally, you could say, invented or used in ancient Greece. And at this point, we use something called the horizontal top bar hive, which is just like one long room for the bees to lay out their comb in versus stacks of boxes. So I went and built one of these in February, had a pretty profound experience in February, actually at the winter solstice that year, knowing that I was doing a card reading for the year on winter solstice, which I always do. And I pulled a card for February, and it had this honeycomb on it that was dripping. And I immediately knew I was going to get pregnant around Imolc, which is the beginning of February. And I warned my partner, I was like, we got to be careful. Like, you know, we're kind of new, like this, I just have this feeling. And we were careful, and still, at exactly that time, I got pregnant. So I was in the process of building a beehive without knowing I was pregnant yet. And It was just a really beautiful experience. So I'm building and preparing for these bees. And then I find out I'm pregnant and I'm actually elated. I was really, really like she had told me she was coming. I was so happy. And we were going to figure it out. And spring was coming. And that's when the bees swarm. And that's when you can actually catch a swarm. A beekeeper can go out and catch these bees and bring them to a box. And at 11 weeks, I miscarried. And I had to go to the hospital and I had to have a whole procedure done because the miscarriage wasn't happening right and they were concerned. And it was awful. It was a really intense and very tragic experience for me. I really wanted to be a mom. Mm-hmm. And the bees came a week later. I was in this sort of liminal in between, sort of like energetically bleeding out too. And this somebody called me, they knew I was looking, and there was a swarm of bees in an apple tree. And for me, apple trees represent love. And they were just, it was just in this beautiful heart shape.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah, I've never seen one like that since. It was just perfect heart. God. And giant swarm. And I collected them and just learned how through trial and error how to be around the bees. And you know, I got stung and got, they brought me back to life. They really grounded me in physical reality, even though they're extremely ethereal beings. They make you so present. You know, it's not like we want to get stung a bunch. And so make you pay attention because they require gentleness and presence. And if you don't have that, and if you're off and away, or if you're aggravated, or if anything is going on where you're not paying attention, they will use sting to let you know that they don't feel safe with you because you're not paying attention. Or at least they'll warn you, they'll bump you. They'll fly right into you and bump your forehead or bump your hand. And it's kind of like a, hey, the next one will be a sting if you don't pay attention.
So they're very energetically attuned to us.
Oh my God. On so many levels, not just energetically, spiritually, but literally they can read the heat signatures in our face. So if we... you know, the heat changes. If we're mad and angry, the heat changes in our face. If we're afraid and nervous, so they can see this. And they also, over time, learn how to memorize faces. So they recognize their beekeeper. Yeah, they're very attuned. In fact, there's all sorts of folklore around, if you go back and look at some of the old archives and stories around bees, about how you can't go to the bees if you're having a fight with somebody in your home. You can't raise your voice around the bees. You can't use foul language or evil language around the bees. Of course, because of the Christian era, you can't take the God's name in vain around the bees. You know, because that they're sensitive. Yeah.
That is funny that this is happening with me too. Because I just got back from this trip from Ecuador and I found out that it's not with bees, but none of the farmers, as they are harvesting, are allowed to curse on the fields, and none of them are allowed to come to work angry because the plants don't need that energy. And I wonder, I mean, the bees, yeah, they can read your face. I wonder how much information is there for me to dive into.
What you're touching on is this universal understanding that the world is alive and conscious. Mm-hmm. And every indigenous culture knows this and has been teaching this and handing it down for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And we in, you know, the global West are trying to remember, some of us, that this is how it is. And so when you find it somewhere, like the bees, it doesn't take too long to find the same thing somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's because they're listening, you know, the bees are listening, the plants are listening, and we can forge that relationship, reach out across the divide. Even if we live in downtown Brooklyn and the only plant life we have is a little rosemary plant on our balcony, you can talk to that plant and eventually you'll feel it talking back to you.
Ah, I love that you said this, because when I was harvesting these ylang ylang flowers, I was asking all of the plants for permission and great showing my gratitude for doing so. And my friends were giggling at me because they know that I'm like the woo-woo bestie. But I also think that it's so important to cultivate that relationship with them. And I think there is a lot of energy exchange when you are working with plants. And if the intention behind your working with them.
It's intention. Intention is everything. And that's the heart of the dream work I do, is dreaming with intent or having an intention. But the cool thing is that science is starting to catch up. You know, even if you look at Emoto's work from a couple decades ago, when that first came out, about looking at what happens when we study water crystals and what we say to the water and how it changes. We are not as solid an individual as we think. And that's one of the coolest things about bees, is they teach us that, because they are a superorganism, meaning they are a number of individual beings that collectively make up a whole. A single bee cannot survive on her own. They have to live within this greater fullness, this greater wholeness that's the being or the superorganism or the colony. And that, when I think about that, one of my favorite mind exercises is to try to ask the question, okay, so this beehive lives in a hollow tree or lives in a box. Where does it end? If there's bees out there foraging and they can go up to 8 miles on a foraging trip looking for flowers or pollen and nectar or even water, where does this singular porous experience of an organism actually end? And you're immediately starting to feel like, oh, the energetic field is much bigger and physically much bigger. And then how does that apply to me and my relationship to what I think of as my physical end and boundaries, and how I might be relating to other people or other things? Because we all know what it's like to walk into a room and feel the energy of a place. Well, it's the same with bees.
Can you start talking to me about dream work?
Sure.
Because this is perfect timing that you have come into my life, because I've been very interested in lucid dreaming, and which I have done before on accident, but I wanted to be more intentional. And a couple of people have just fallen into my life in the last couple of weeks to talk about that. So I think it's all for a purpose. And I would love to hear what you have to say about that.
Isn't it always?
Yeah.
One of the things I love, like the kind of jokes / spiritual truths about bees, is that they're quite good at bringing about synchronistic events. There's something about bees and their relationship to a wholeness that there's just always so many synchronicities when people get into bees. So dream work, yeah, my history in dream work comes from a very young age, and mostly from my father, who is an avid dreamer. So I'm used to sharing dreams, and I'm used to growing up in a situation where it's normal to have semi-prophetic dreams or prophetic dreams. And that is, you know, a gift in terms of not having to convince myself that this is the case, but just being used to it. However, and I did get into lucid dream work for a while, which is wonderful. I love lucid dream work. My main interest at this point is actually intentional dreaming or dream incubation. So let's go back and see what that word means. Dream incubation, in the way I'm talking about it, can be traced back, at least an example of it can be traced back to ancient Greece, where it was common for people to go to incubation chambers or temples to, after, you know, creating a certain set of practices and then going to a temple, such as the Asclepions, dedicated to the god Asclepius, who's the god of healing. We know his symbol because it's the staff with the serpent twined around it, god of medicine, right? And they would seek to dream and receive a dream from the gods. The Melissa did this as well, the bee priestesses. And when we talk about the gods, it might be the god of healing, or it might be, you know, Demeter, or the goddess of the harvest, or whatever it was. But really what we're talking about in modern day language is to connect with this idea of the animate earth or spirit, or the spirit of. So in my work, I set intentions, or I teach people to work with creating an intention to invite the benevolence of another being, the spirit of that being, or that's the spirit of the consciousness around something, to dream with you. And the bees seem to be particularly adept at bridging that divide and working with us. So the intent would be to dream with the bees, to invite their particular knowledge, their particular lens into our dreamscape and see what happens. And it might be that it's just to dream with bees, or it might be to dream with bees to help find, like, what are my next steps in my life right now? Or I'm thinking about, you know, ending my relationship. I need some support. And so you're asking for the support to come in this case, the bees. It could also be the earth, or it could be the trees, or it could be the spirit of your business. Like, they've definitely done that. When we start to look at business as a spiritual experience, it's not just the practical ins and outs, but it's also that once you create a business, it has its own field of influence, its own conscious energy, and we can start to engage with that. So again, all of this is coming from a more animistic shamanic point of view. Mm-hmm. Another example would be to dream with my maternal lineage and to start to understand my ancient grandmothers. So there's all of these ways, and it's always in a beneficial way. You know, we're really working with the beneficial ancestors and whatnot, but it's to seek. So with bees, you know, I've been teaching a course called Dreaming with Bees for about 6 years, I think now, maybe longer. And with this practice, over and over again, I see the bees showing up in these interesting ways where I'll invite people to start dreaming with bees, and they think they're going to dream about bees, but instead they have these dreams about, like, oh, I'm in this really busy city with all of these small streets, and I'm wandering around and there's people everywhere. Over and over again, people have this dream when they dream with bees. Well, yeah, sounds like a human version of a beehive.
Yeah.
Oh, I walk into a room and there's just all of these women, and they're like laughing and cooking or sewing. I'm like, oh yeah. Sounds a lot like the human version of the bees, because the females are the ones doing the majority of the work in the hive. So or they'll have dreams where it's like, I was just like in this color, and it was sort of like amber. Just that's all I remember. Yeah. Or I saw a flower and I was really small, but the flower was like three times my size. So, but I didn't dream about bees. Sure you didn't.
And then when they tell you these types of dreams, is that it? Or do we start to unravel what those messages are for them?
Yeah. So then I do intuitive dream mirroring, which is a beautiful practice. And it takes, you can do versions of it on your own, but it does take a hive, or take a couple of people at least. And the idea behind that is that we work with our body, and we drop in to wherever it feels like an intuitive center for you. And we're really, yes, there is the third eye and we can go there, but we're really working on dropping deeper into the body. So the two places I work with are the heart center and then the womb center, or the pelvic bowl. You know, everyone has this pelvic bowl, this rooted gut knowledge. And then for those who have wombs, we work with the womb center. And it's seen as this place of really deep wisdom and knowledge. In fact, if we look all the way back to the oracles of Delphi, they were womb shamans working with prophecy. Bees are associated with prophecy throughout, well, Germany, Scandinavia, Celtic world, Egypt, Greece, you know. So the process is to drop in and listen from that place. You know, we know about, oh, I'm going to listen from my heart, not my head. It's the same idea. I'm going to listen to this dream from my heart, or from my womb, or from my belly. And then I'm just going to open myself up to all of my senses, the physical sensations that show up as I'm listening. I close my eyes and listen. Feelings in my emotional field, images that might show up, phrases, words, questions, knowings. We have all these pathways of knowing and intuition, and we start to reflect back. So someone might tell me that they've had a dream where they're, you know, confronting this flower, and it might be related to the bees, but I also might drop in and say, hey, oh, there's a part of you right now that I'm feeling is really wanting to open and has been really tight for a long time. And that would be more of an intuitive mirror than flipping through a dream symbol book, trying to figure out what does a flower mean in a dream symbol book, right, which is also helpful, but not the only way. So right. Intuitive work It's like feeding the dream back more dream language for the person who's receiving it to kind of sit in the texture and the soup of that and follow the breadcrumbs, see what else is there for them.
I love that comparison. Do I need to have bees to dream with bees, or can I just call upon their energy?
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't need to have bees. You can work with bees as sacred beings, absolutely, without having them around. I do a dream work meditation where I invite people to drop into the sense of being a tree and then having a bee hollow, because the native habitat for most northern climate honeybees is a tree. They're arboreal beings. And I have them imagine that there is a beehive in their heart or in their womb of this tree. They're stepping into the tree, and we're working with this sort of shamanic world tree aspect that you see again and again in classical shamanism. And then to imagine that you're also a bee returning to the hive at dusk, at nighttime, to burrow in and be given nectar and be given the warmth and be given the hum, listening to that hum of the hive, that quiet hum. All of these things can help us shift our reality as we're preparing to sleep. And so we're imagining that we're surrounded by bees as we're going to sleep. We're imagining that we are a bee as we're going to sleep. And then we're saying our intention at least three times. Okay, tonight I intend to dream with bees. Maybe you wake up and have to go to the bathroom. You come back to bed. You're back in the hive. You're back in your heart. You're back with the bees. And you're saying your intention in your mind again. And these things help create repetition, which signals to you and your spirit and also your intellect that this is important. Pay attention to what I'm doing. And it also sort of sends the beacon out to the bee spirits. You can think of every animal as having a sort of an overarching spirit. People call them devas, people call them spirits, people call them consciousness. It doesn't matter. We can invite that into our lives.
So you briefly touched on the kind of ritual to prepare to intentionally dream with bees through your meditation. Mm-hmm. Is there a type of integrative practice that you recommend people do once they wake up?
Yeah. So a meditation is a great way to drop in, but you don't always have to. I think the basic architecture for intentional dreaming and really any dream work is you want to have a dream journal. You want to have... I like to, here's my deal. This is what I do.
Yes.
And this has changed a little since I've had a child.
Naturally. But
I like to have a very soft light next to my bed, not a bright light, even a headlamp, but a soft light or like a red light, something that I can turn on that isn't going to really bother my eyes. And I have my dream journal. I write my intention on the top of the page and then close the book with the pen in the page. In fact, when I'm in a very serious moment of dream work, I'll sleep with it under my pillow. And when I wake up, even if it's the middle of the night, I'll keep my eyes closed and try to pull back the threads of the dream that are starting to fade. Even if you can just grab onto one emotion or one color, let go of the story and just try to remember one sensation from the dream, that will start to spool it back. And then as you sit up with that and start to write in the low light, then you'll start to recall more of the dream usually. And if you don't, that's okay. It doesn't matter. I also don't discount dreams that don't feel important or don't feel spiritual. I write whatever is there down. And I'll, in the middle of the night or even first thing in the morning, sometimes I'll just bullet point some things, just a few scrappy notes, and then I'll have my coffee and sit down and like write what I actually remember. Or I use a phone to record into the device, that just like voice notes, because yeah. Hello, toddler waking me up in the morning. So right. There's not a lot of like quiet, gently writing for me, unless it's the middle of the night. And then I'll always transcribe it. So the writing it down, what you write down, try not to interpret your dreams when you're writing them down, but what you do write down matters. So you'll notice when you go back and check your dreams, oh, interesting, I wrote it that way. Like that's already you telling yourself something. So there's that piece. And another thing that I love to do is to do this process of recapitulation, which is where before I go to bed, I go back over my whole day and play it like a movie reel and notice the emotions. And I notice the scent and sound and physical experiences, the cadence of my day, including the sensate, so that when I wake up, I'm doing the same things with my dreams, including the sensate experience, the embodied experience of the dream, not just the story. And by bookending my days and my nights this way, I create a rhythm. And it's part of what I teach in my classes, creating this rhythm, again, telling myself to integrate and remember my dreams. I do have other practices that I do post-dream if I want to work with finding out more about the dream, but I don't have a partner to do mirroring with. Mm. And those are things like automatic writing. My favorite one that I pass on to lots of people is very simple. Set a timer, 5 minutes, get a piece of paper, close your eyes before you let the timer go, and go back, imagine the dream, and choose one character, object, landscape, aspect, animal, plant, just something that's in the dream that grabs your attention, that's not you. And then open your eyes, set the timer, and write from the first person perspective of that thing. So I am a mirror, and you just start with descriptive words. I'm a mirror and I am blue. My surface is blue. And already now you have something different. My surface is blue. Oh yeah, that's right. And now you're starting to see what else is coming from that. And you'll glean messages that way from your subconscious and from spirit.
Right. Because from my understanding, 88% of our brain is subconscious. Mm-hmm. And 2, when we're sleeping is our brain's opportunity to integrate all of that together. Yeah. And make it make sense from our day. So the importance of dream work is, and correct me if I'm wrong, or there's a better way to say this, is practicing that muscle of recording what our subconscious is trying to tell us, making it a habit, and then better being able to connect with that higher self that's attempting to communicate with us, and then gleaning those messages and integrating them into our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the coolest things is, even if you don't do anything beyond writing down your dreams, you're already starting to create a map for yourself, and you can look back, do a monthly review, go back and reread your dreams and start to see the themes coming out. Start to see who's showing up. Maybe you're repeatedly dreaming about horses, but didn't even notice it. Okay, well, it's not just what do horses symbolize, but maybe there's some kind of connection with the consciousness of the horse trying to reach through to you to help support you at this time, right? So it's not just about what does it mean. It's also about what's the support coming through, because we're not alone. And when we intentionally dream, we're stepping into this greater weave that is the whole earth, and can be really supportive.
If someone, quick side note, if someone does find something like that where they're dreaming about horses and that energy of the horses is trying to communicate with them, what do they do next?
The very first thing I always tell people is, okay, now it's time to actually intend to dream with the horses. I want to ask them. This whole week, I'm going to ask every night to dream with the spirit of the horse or with the consciousness. You know, find a word that works for you. And I'm going to see what happens.
You were the first beekeeper, because I went through a few, who introduced me to the idea of bee shamanism. Mm. And we know that right now you studied with the women at the Sacred Trust in England, and bee shamanism was brought about by Simon Buxton. And the first thing that I want to ask is, what is bee shamanism and what were these teachings and what did you learn? And the second part of that is, I know that there was a scandal recently with Simon Buxton and his beliefs and writings on bee shamanism. So I would love for you to address that and address how that's impacting your work and the work of so many women around the world today.
So many women. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to attempt to do this in a somewhat concise way, but let's begin with not so much the controversy, but the history. Simon Buxton wrote a book called The Shamanic Way of the Bee. And this book was published as nonfiction and included a description of an experience he had meeting a bee mentor named Bridge, and then a group of women, six women, known as the Melissa. And these women were comprised of Lithuanian women and I think British women, and together made something called a cell. And they claimed that the bee tradition that they were practicing, which Simon named the Path of Pollen — nobody else named it that, just Simon, which of course we didn't know until more recently — these people, these women, claimed that this folk tradition, however small it was, had been passed down, so to speak, from mouth to ear, so through the oral tradition, over generations, and can be traced back eventually to ancient Greece, that it came up through ancient Greece into Lithuania and then over, was my understanding. So until really this year, when I would introduce bee shamanism, I would say European bee shamanism, because I'm sure there's other forms of bee shamanism throughout the world. European bee shamanism is a folk tradition that has roots in Lithuania and Celtic Britain and ancient Greece. So that is where it came from. And here's what's interesting, is that Simon wrote this book, and it already had some scandal associated with it, because plagiarism was found in the book, particularly by P.L. Travers, who is the author of Mary Poppins, but also a really incredible spiritual author. She wrote a beautiful book named What the Bee Knows. So that part of What the Bee Knows was found in Simon's book. So we're just going to put a pin in that and come back to all of that. Simon started the tradition, or the school, the Sacred Trust, and he went on to teach classical shamanism through the Michael Harner method. As far as I've understood, I've never taken a course with him, so I don't know exactly what he teaches. But he did, before that, pass on some of this work to a woman named Naomi Lewis, another woman named Kate Sheila, who neither of them work at the Sacred Trust anymore, but Kate Sheila was one of my first teachers, so is Naomi Lewis. And it was always said that this was a women's tradition, and it wasn't Simon's to teach, that he passed it on to them. And, there was a lot of other stories, like the main teacher from the women's side of things passed away, and that's why Simon was asked to introduce these women to these other women. And they met, but it turns out they actually never met in person. They just met over the phone. All this complex stuff that's been very convoluted. But irregardless of any of that, what these women created was a beautiful synthesis of bee-centric practices and womb shamanism. So Simon never taught womb shamanism. I don't know all the details of what came from where, but womb shamanism, at least according to this work, was this idea that the womb, whether you have a physical one or work with it as a spiritual center, because of course not all women or women-identifying people have wombs, it is a center of profound healing, of spiritual wisdom or gnosis, of intuition, of dream work. It's where we dream from. And there's so many gorgeous practices and healing modalities that came out of that, like even just womb sipping, which I still use, which is this idea that I can perceive this part of my body similar to a bee and reach down into the earth with the quote unquote proboscis, or a line of energy, you could say, and draw energy up from the earth into the womb. When we live in a society that focuses a lot of its spiritual practices on bringing things down from the heavens, bringing things down from the stars, bringing things down from the ascended masters, it's a really interesting flip to work with earth-centric, womb-centric, drawing things up. I've stood in a river and just imagined all that flowing, beautiful blue-green water flowing into my womb and then cascading through my body. And it's both purifying and electric and softening and erotic all at the same time. So this true embodied reconnecting that was very much led by the bee. And so that's a little bit about what I was doing for a decade. I studied there for a decade. And I was one of the first people to start teaching this work publicly, from what I know, like very publicly. Enter 2023. So over the years, there were some questions about the truth of where this all came from. I actually went and had two conversations with Simon over Zoom. And, you know, over the years, just like, really, can you tell me where it came from? Can you talk about the plagiarism? Because I was starting to teach and I wanted to be in integrity. And, you know, I took him at his word. And my teachers also, you know, asked similar questions of him and took him at his word. Some of the women from my last final cohort, we did a 3-year program working with healing modalities and oracular work, which is just gorgeous. Again, really beautiful practices. They started doing some very serious digging through first through the book. And what they found wasn't just plagiarism from P.L. Travers, but over 60 different instances of plagiarism from other authors. Rudolf Steiner, Jeanette Winterson, so many authors. In fact, you can find it online at this point, the document. And this was brought to the attention of the faculty, the female faculty at the Sacred Trust. They had a meeting with Simon, and he finally admitted, after many different interviews and meetings that he said otherwise, he finally admitted to the fact that a lot of the book that was written in first person, real world experienced perspective was actually comprised of what they call non-ordinary reality experiences, meaning things that happened in journeys or dreams or whatever, but, you know, very much Carlos Castaneda style. And so what's happened is this huge, huge rift in the community of all of these women. The women, the teachers, everybody left. Every single person left the Sacred Trust because there's this big question now. And it's still in process. This is December 2023 or November 2023. And we're recording this in December. So we're still trying to glean what's true. Who were these people that my teacher was put into contact with who are from the Bee tradition? Because they did exist, but who were they? And at least as far as we know, they existed, you know. What did Simon take potentially from other teachers or other people? Because now there's evidence of that coming out, that he stole from other women's teachings. And those of us that love this work want to feel that we're in integrity in learning how to pass it on as truthfully as possible. And that's quite a spiritual growing point for a lot of people. There's been so much anger for so many women and just heartbreak and a sense of betrayal and animosity towards each other for having different viewpoints. And then there's been so many people who also are like, you know what? It doesn't bother me because these practices I took into my body and they speak true. And I've had my own epiphanies and I've interacted with the bees and it's like sound. The work is sound, even if the origins aren't. So we're in this like cancel culture confusion of how do we be in integrity? How do we find spiritual ethics here? How do we continue to work with the bees? How do we not let some patriarchal system and some man's lies take away a womb-centric practice and the years of teachings coming from women who added to this over the years as they were very apparent, like they told us. We are always adding to it. We're bringing in more. We're working with what else, you know, and all that, what else comes through. It's a very convoluted moment. And it is asking us to come back to center and check in with our integrity, especially if we're facilitating teachings that have been influenced by this at every moment. And that's been the big work for me is how do I move forward in spiritual integrity and with the right ethics?
Right now, it sounds like from what you're telling me, the big challenge is, and correct me if I'm wrong, the teachings are still healing, and the ritual and the belief system is still powerful and potent. The struggle is the fact that it came from and was stolen from so many people. So how do we, and the man who did this and kind of, and it feels to me kind of stole this power from women, which is what it's supposed to be about. And right. So our struggle right now is reconciling, how do I find this middle ground with integrity of continuing to teach these healing, profound practices while also making sure that I'm paying appropriate respect to where they actually came from. Am I understanding this correctly?
Right. Exactly. And some of that is being literally researched at the moment.
Yeah.
Finding where some core teachings are. A really good example is a beautiful practice called fire sipping. And I believe this is one of the practices that was taken from another practitioner, although I don't have their name on the top, on the top of my head. I'm still waiting for that research to come through. As some really dedicated women are working on this research. But the fire sipping is a practice I absolutely love. And the simplicity of it is so gorgeous. It's just taking a beeswax candle. You want to work with beeswax, not soy, not paraffin. You want the beeswax, because when a beeswax candle burns, it's the only candle that actually purifies the air in the process. And you can really smell the smell of a hive when you're really close to a beeswax candle. It's a gorgeous smell. And the practice is simply plucking the flame without dousing the flame and breathing it in through the nostrils and then watching it descend down to the womb and filling the womb with that warmth, melting its way down, these like drops of liquid honey, drops of liquid gold. And it can be so activating and soothing at the same time. You're feeling the warmth from your fingers being right around the flame, and you're feeling it at the nostrils, and then you're working with the images from the hive, whether it's a droplet of fire or a droplet of nectar. And it is so gorgeous to watch women and men, you could work with it anywhere in the body, just sort of melt with this fire sipping. But we're finding out it didn't come from the folk tradition that we thought existed. We don't even know if there was a folk tradition anymore. So now we're asking, well, who brought this practice in? And how did it come in? What was the original practice? And then how has it changed to meet the B aspect? Mm-hmm. And yet, despite both of those things, like the we don't knows, or the whatever's being discovered around that as an example, there is still this intuitive relating to working with the element of fire and nectar and warmth and softening that is profoundly healing for people. So it's hard to know. I think that's a very concrete example of something that we know is taken from someone else. But again, it's hard to know what to teach and how to teach it.
I'm just getting this ping sort of right now about you're learning about all of this womb wisdom at a time when you had such a heartbreaking miscarriage and were trying to get pregnant and you were going through pregnancy. So it's even deeper for you. Is that?
Yeah, that's correct. That's the thing with all of this is that if I can't be angry at him, and that's a pretty vulnerable thing to say considering how many women are angry, mm-hmm. but I can't find the anger. I'm disappointed, but I'm not angry because every step of that journey, including the book he wrote, brought me to England for the first time, got me involved with the bees that probably saved my life. Honestly, like keeping bees, I don't know what would have happened to me, but I was not okay. And in every step of the way, this daughter is here because of that work. And to give it a better example, you know, when I first came back to the work, so I went there, I had my first profound experience. The bees came into my life. I got the hit that I was going to get pregnant. I did get pregnant. Didn't get the hit that I was going to miscarry. Would have loved that. But, you know, again, it's like dark night of the soul, soul initiation, the underworld journey. There it was. Yeah. And I was still in it a couple years later in 2012 or 13, when I went back and started a three-part program over there, working with what we call the three sisterhoods. And again, there's something that's rather universal. We work with the sisterhood of the spinners. Well, spinning and weaving magic is all over the world in association with women. And then we would work with the sisterhood of the wise maidens. Well, that's the healers and the apothecary and the, you know, the herbalist. So these are archetypes that we're working with, but also spirits that sit within our own ancestral lineage and beyond, and the bees themselves. But what I remember was going there and feeling like my womb was just this, it used to have a motor, like it used to be moving. It used to be something, and it was just sort of deadened, not dead, but deadened.
Yes.
And this work required a lot from me, but it brought me back into my body. It is such embodied practice. And that's something that you don't always find in spiritual work, for it to be truly about the body and the body's wisdom. So it brought me back into my body. It got the motor running. It got the womb to come back online. And I could suddenly feel a connection to that part of my body, meaning that I was holding all the grief there and I didn't want to even touch it. And I had to come back to a relationship with it that wasn't just about creating a child, that was about creative expression and dreams and intuition and healing and all of these other things. And then throughout the years, I went through my own grief journey of looking for a partner and looking for, and each step of the way, I became more and more confident in myself, in my ability to manifest my dreams, in my ability to trust my body. Everything led to the moment when I, you know, the donor showed up in my life. It was all very fast. Very, very, very fast. It was years and years of searching and looking and trying to find a partner and even looking for the right donor. And then all of a sudden, it just happened. All of a sudden. And within 2 weeks of finding the donor, you know, I was ovulating and he and his family came up to meet me at my house. It was the middle of the pandemic of all things. And my midwife met with him and received the sample that he brought to the door because they were staying in a trailer on our property. Like, it was all so awkward and funny and weird. And we did all the paperwork, like made sure she was 100% mine. Like, he was on it with that. and then we did the procedure at my house, but like,
wow. Look,
the bees swarmed on the day of my insemination. So I just want to say to anybody who's ever thought the only way to have like a magical conscious conception is with one other person and it's got to be true love and it's got to be this and that, that is not true. And I learned a big lesson that day. Like, I had insanely magical conscious conception. Bees swarmed. I went to the swarm hovering in this tree and looked down and there was a stag's antler in the ground.
Oh my God, I'm crying.
Yeah. I went to the beehive because I did two inseminations in morning and 12 hours apart. Recommendation, if you ever think to do this, anyone listening, do it. Do two in the same day, 12 hours apart. My midwife recommended that. And so I was in there. It was the full moon and I was in there.
Oh my God.
And I see the queen. I'm sitting there looking at the queen bee, just like, wow, there she is. Because she doesn't always reveal herself. She's a very secretive lady. She's quite veiled. So here she is immediately. I pull out a frame and she's right there just crawling across. And I look down at my feet and a giant, giant gopher snake, which look like a rat. They look like rattlesnakes, but they're non-venomous, is sliding past my feet. I mean, this is beyond, like, all of these symbols of fertility like male fertility in the antler, and bees represent fertility, and snakes represent fertility. My sisters were like, well, honey, if you're not pregnant, we don't believe in magic anymore.
And not to mention the high frequencies you must have been emitting to also on your ovulation under the light of the full moon to attract the energies of all of these different animals. I mean, everything was aligned. What a comfort that must have been.
I remember my sister being like, is it going to be a unicorn next? Because we're expecting one to walk out of the forest.
So I can a little bit more empathize with the complexity that you're working with right now in such raw time as this news is coming out.
Yeah. And the news had to come out, you know, it was time for whatever reason. And for me, it's very liberating because what I keep coming back to is the womb wisdom is womb wisdom no matter what. So that's still true. And the bees are still the bees. And I've had profound experiences with both. So it doesn't take away my experience of healing in my life. And it doesn't take away the experience of healing in other people's lives either. It doesn't diminish that. And if we let it, you know, that's really hard. That's really sad. And that's going to be happening for some people. It's going to take away their sense of healing that they experienced. And I hope that eventually they can come back to that healing was because they met spirit. We receive healing because we are ready and it's time. And we are able to come, you know, meet it all halfway.
What does this look like for you moving forward?
Working that out. But it does look like, you know, dream work. Again, I've been doing it for years. I'm still working on dream work. I'm still teaching my women's beekeeping apprenticeship, which combines actual beekeeping over a 10-month period. It actually starts in January, although sometimes people come in a little late, February, March. But it's a 10-month women's program where we focus on, you know, womb healing, and we call it folklore and spiritual ecology and beekeeping, practical natural beekeeping, looking at how to keep bees in a way that's more bee-centric and more about who they are and how they live in the wild and how to adapt that to perhaps more natural practices, how to connect with them and communicate with them. So all of that's still there. That's all my body of work. It's more about how to work with some of my favorite practices in honor of where they really came from, or just being honest and saying, I don't actually know where this came from. This is who I learned it from. And that is a tightrope walk right now.
Would you mind really quickly touching on if someone wants to start getting involved with bees, maybe even have their own apiary, would you recommend they take your course, your 10-month course? Would it cover that? Where might be a good place to start?
It would. And some people dive into that even a year before they even want to keep bees. That's one option, especially if you want to go really deep and have more of that deeper interpersonal experience. But first and foremost, if you want to keep bees, if you're interested in an apiary, for anybody who's listening and doesn't know, is anywhere that has more than one hive. So an apiary is like a garden for bees. Although I think maybe you could call even just one hive an apiary. But usually that means it's where you have a couple of hives of bees or more. And you don't need to have a lot of hives to be a beekeeper. You know, two is great. One is great. I like to think of it as, you know, the more community gardens, backyard chicken coops we can have, the better. And plenty of people do urban beekeeping too. So the first thing I would do is think about what can I do to contribute to a food source for pollinators in it where I live? And is there enough food for the bees? A lot of people want to get bees, but don't live in a place where there's enough food. So find out look at the pollinator partnership. If you're living in the United States, pollinatorpartnership.org, and find out what actually blooms in your region. When does it bloom? Who eats it? Pollinatorpartnership.org. And maybe consider starting to plant some plants if you have the availability to and the funds to do so. We're looking at things like any culinary herbs are really great for bees, especially things like rosemary, lavender. You know, just think about, is there food and can I provide food? So that's number one. Then number two is to ask yourself why. That's really helpful to know your why. It's not about needing to match with my why. It's just about knowing yours. What's calling you? And even if you don't know, you just feel this mysterious draw, identify that for yourself. If it's about honey, that's fine as well. But just understand why you're compelled to be with the bees. And then start to learn about who they are. So do all of these things before getting into the how. And that's actually what I teach primarily in my natural beekeeping course, which is a short course. It's 4 hours. I say short because it's not a 10-month program. So it's a four-hour on-demand course that ranges between 35 and 50. It's sliding scale. And you can just get it. Got a bunch of slides for you to look at and kind of goes into these different things before talking about, you know, tools and types of hives and how to get bees and those first few days of getting bees and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. That's going to be more affordable.
Yeah, that sounds good. That sounds good. So is there anything else? But I ask all of my guests 5 fun questions at the end of my podcast. But before I get into that, is there anything else that you want our listeners to know about you, your offerings, bees in general, or the Sacred Trust?
Leave the Sacred Trust to themselves, because I'm sure more information will keep coming out. They can always write me if they're interested and want to know more. To just pay attention. You don't need to know about me and my offerings. You can find out that online. But start, if there's like one thing that you could do today, it would be to start to make a relationship with anything that you're drawn to outside. You know, whether it's, and this is the thing. By making a relationship, I mean have a conversation. Act as if they're listening. Whether it's a conversation with the moon or a conversation with the river or a conversation with the trees, you can do it out loud or you can do it in your head. You can do just a hello. Kids do this all the time. They say hi because they know. So start that. Just like maybe every day you go out your front door and there's just a sycamore tree out there and you just kind of give it a pat and say hi. Start there. Because what you're doing is you're reaching out through the invisible bonds. And at some point, you're going to feel that being met. And that's part of being one of the mysteriously magical organisms alive on planet Earth today.
That's beautiful. I love that. I'm going to start. I used to have a beautiful herbal and produce garden years ago when I had the space, and every day I would go out and touch everything. I would play classical music for them. I would thank them. I would sit with them, and it was profound. And now that I moved into a house with a backyard, we are getting ready for a fat garden in the back and hopefully do that again. Okay, so 5 fun questions. If you could have a conversation with any spiritual teacher, living or historical, who would it be and why?
Oh gosh, I need to remember her name. There's an interesting one coming forward that I wasn't expecting. So I'm going to try and remember her name. Hildegard von Bergen. She is a musician. She was German and she was a nun, and she wrote ecstatic music that is still like held as quite profound by a lot of spiritual communities today that are non-Christian. I'm saying it's a surprise because I usually go for like anything witchy. I'm very much a witch, but I want to know what her experience was in writing that music. I would love to know what that connection was. Super unrelated to bees.
I love that.
Hildegard von Bingen?
Bingen? Yeah. I looked her up. Yeah. Now I have someone else to look into after this podcast. Wonderful. What is something cool that bees do that not many people know about, but you just think is super fun and quirky and delightful?
Oh yeah. I don't even know if this is quirky, but this is like, it's one of my faves.
Yeah.
So honeybees can reverse age. Honeybees go through this process very briefly where they, you know, they hatch, larva, pupa, hatch, metamorphosis, all that. Wow. And then they have different jobs like building comb or taking care of the honey. But eventually, in the last 2 weeks of their life, they become foraging bees and they go out and like find flowers and bring back food. When they're, before they do that, when they're in the younger stage, they have the ability to produce the like mother's milk of all mother's milk, which is called royal jelly. And they feed that to the young. And that comes through a gland in their forehead. And then as they get older, that gland atrophies, goes away, and off they go to start foraging. If a hive is in need for whatever reason, like there's a shortage of bees with this gland available and there's a big hatching, these older bees can reverse age, can regrow that atrophied gland and start producing mother's milk, royal jelly, which is a insane, like carries insane growth hormones to the point where it was like used by Cleopatra for, you know, skincare and such. So I think that's amazing that here we are as humans trying to figure out how to do it all the time. And these are just like, yeah, we got that.
I think that's splendid. That's exactly what I was looking for. So you have a daughter who's 3. That's a fun age, I think, because they're communicating with you. They're exploring. And so you get, and you also get to know their personalities a little bit more. So I want to know, if you and your daughter were to trade roles for a day, what is the first thing that she would do as a parent and you would do as a child?
Oh, wow. Interesting. She's been doing a lot of mothering of me lately. So every morning she's grabbing my face between her two hands and telling me she loves me and giving me kisses. So I think that would happen. I think the first thing she would do with me is take me outside. She'd be like, it's time. We can even skip breakfast. Let's just go outside. Yeah. And we'd probably just get in some puddles.
I love that she's such a nature baby.
Yeah.
That's so important. If bees could communicate with us, what is the overall message that they would send us?
Bees really function from a frequency of love and service that is almost beyond what we can experience on a daily basis, although we do and can experience it. But one of the things that they show me again and again through meditations and practices is that my understanding of life and death is too small. And there's all this stuff about the bees dying and save the bees, and they're very much like very much trying to show this ouroboric thing that's happening that I don't quite comprehend. Like, life bleeds into death, bleeds into life, bleeds into death. It's constant. And they're not so worried. Like, they're just not so worried, which is incredibly hard for me to grasp because I am absolutely a conservationist and like banging on the doors and ringing the bells. And like, it's time. Oh my God, Anthropocene, time to do something. And they're like, yeah, you gotta do something. But also, I don't know how to explain it. They just keep shooting, like, not to worry, which is not the message I want to give to humanity right now, in a way of like, please keep conserving the rainforest and like clean the water. But the overall sort of bigger ideas of life and death, they show me glimpses of it in ways that I cannot translate into words. And I would say the best way to understand that is to just be around them, because it's beyond our physical experience of life and death. And not a great answer because I can't explain it.
It does sound like a great answer because it does sound like the bees can teach us a lot about having profound, ridiculous, doesn't make sense faith and trust that it's all going to work out. Everything is as it is.
Yeah, I really think it will. I don't know if humanity will, you know, like a lot of biodiversity is being lost. I don't know what's going to happen, but there's an understanding with them that goes beyond the immediate experience of now. I mean, they are 30 million years old, so they do know what they do.
Yeah, they've got a little bit of wisdom to impart on us. My last question is for you personally. Can you walk me through your personal wellness practices?
Right. Okay, great. So some of my top wellness practices in terms of receiving support from others are craniosacral. Highly recommend. I've done some beautiful sound healing work where someone actually sings into your body and sings over your body. Really and really profound things, like full on visions happening in that process. Acupuncture, big fan. I'm really into working with lymphatic drainage at the moment and gua sha. So face massage, gua sha, working with all the sort of nervous system points in the body and, you know, self touch. I feel like it's very helpful, especially as a single person. So, you know, just like massaging my face is really nice.
Yes.
So those are some of the ones I really love that are coming to mind at the moment. Yeah.
That's perfect. I just had, while I was in this farm in Ecuador, there's also a spa that was all like holistic, beautiful things I can't talk about because of the FDA stuff. Mm-hmm. And one of the services was an emotional release.
Mm-hmm.
Therapy, and the practitioner worked with craniosacral in order to work through that.
Yeah.
And I don't know anything about craniosacral anything except that she mentioned that and she put her hands mm-hmm. under my back.
Yeah.
Yes. Is this relevant?
Yeah.
And then she went through my chakras.
Yeah.
And identified blockages, which I didn't expect. None of this was what I expected. And oh my gosh, immediately she went over my sacral chakra and she was like, this is mostly clear, but what is the block here? And I'm just like bawling my eyes out because I also had a miscarriage and I also had a birth where my power was taken away from me, which I'm still working through. So love that you do that. And I'm hoping to do more of that myself.
I do a lot of that myself in terms of healing. I don't do it for money right now, but I work with the chakras as flowers and work with finding those balances with people. Energy work is actually really powerful and it can bring forward a lot of healing. And I just want to say, having a birth through your powers taken away is it's a big journey of healing and reclaiming of sovereignty. And so I have a lot of compassion for that
Thank you for spending time with me.
You're welcome.
You are absolutely splendid and quirky and delightful, and you gave me so much more information than I anticipated, and I'm really grateful. And I'm really grateful for your eloquency. Well, and the way that you broke so many things down in a way that's so digestible for someone who has no information on this to begin with. And I am so dearly hoping that as more information comes out about Simon Buxton and all of this, that you and the women in the Sacred Trust hopefully find peace and find their footing as they continue to practice and hopefully continue to practice. I hope you enjoyed the wisdom, knowledge, and camaraderie that was shared today. If you enjoy this podcast and hanging out every week, make sure to subscribe to this show so that you never miss an episode. And if you really want to make my heart sing with joy, take a couple of minutes today to rate and review this show. In doing this, you're exposing the show to others that are just like you and just like me and would benefit from the information shared here as well. If we're not already connected, you can follow me on Instagram at woowoobestie_Suzie, S-U-Z-Y, where I share more about my plant magic journey, spirituality, and knowledge about essential oils. I've also linked our Woo Woo Bestie Facebook group below if you're not already a part of it. It's a safe space for seekers of wisdom and those anywhere on their journey of spirituality. Ask your questions, share your moon rituals, learn from the collective wisdom of the woo-woo community. All are welcome, and I would love to see you there. I hope that you have the best week ever. Until next time.